Blog Talk Radio.
Clearly, we have a bunch on the terror attack in London this weekend. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the response from the British government, the Prime Minister, President Trump, how he managed to weigh in on this and shove his foot in his mouth. We also have an update on the war in Afghanistan. We have an article from the New York Times that really clearly shows an establishment bias, and I'm going to explain all the ins and outs of that for you a little bit later on. And then we're going to check in with the Democrats, see what they're up to. Spoiler alert, Russia, Russia, Russia. And then corporate Democrat Joe Manchin can't help himself, keep showing his colors. Some good news coming out of California, some fundamentalists in North Carolina getting goofy. So sit down, buckle up. It's gonna be a mix or a range of emotions today, and we're gonna start with the negative ones. What happened in London? Let me give you what we know to this point. Let's do it. There was another terror attack in London this weekend. Let me give you the information that we have. To this point, this is from CNN, armed officers responding to the London Bridge terror attack fired an unprecedented number of rounds at the three attackers because they were wearing what appeared to be suicide belts, police said. Eight officers fired 50 shots at three attackers to ensure they were neutralized, said Mark Rowley, Assistant Commissioner for Specialist Operations in the Metropolitan Police Service. Rowley is Britain's most senior counterterrorism office. I think I'm supposed to say officer. The suicide belts were later determined to be fake, suggesting the attackers deliberately used the belts to ensure they would be killed. Rowley said he was not surprised at the police response. Seven people died and 48 were injured when three men drove a van into pedestrians on London Bridge before leaping out and launching a stabbing spree in nearby bars and restaurants. Okay, so here we go again. I wouldn't be surprised if this number ticks up and there are more people killed. And because there are a lot of the 48 people who are injured, many of them are in critical condition. So just a disgusting terrorist attack. As of right now, as of the recording of what you're watching, they haven't released the names of the attackers yet. But this is now three terror attacks in a very short time span in London, or I guess in the UK. And yeah, this is something to be concerned about. So one of the issues that they've been dealing with is they've had a lot of people leave Britain, go to Syria, fight as jihadists on the battlefield in Syria, along with Syrian rebels against the Syrian government, and then they just come right back in the country. And there are, I don't know what the number was, it was 400 or a couple thousand, but there are people who are persons of interest, let's say, for lack of a better term, who intelligence officials kind of know, hey, these guys are the problem, but they keep getting away with the attack. So, look, that leads me to say, and this isn't, you could try to spin this as like a conservative position or a right-wing position or what have you, but that you need to have a reasonable vetting system for the people who come back into your country after they go to Syria. I mean, there is a civil war going on in Syria. There's nothing, you know, bigoted about saying, hey, man, you just traveled to a region where there's a civil war, a hot war going on right now, and on the rebel side, at least 60% of the fighters are just avowed, admitted jihadists and Islamists. So that's a red flag. It's not like you're being unreasonable and you're doing, you know, like here in the U.S. with Trump and his Muslim ban or his attempt at a Muslim ban. Like, that is unreasonable because, yes, you're lumping too many innocent people into the bin with jihadists. But to say, oh, if you go to Syria and you come back, that you merit extra scrutiny, and if there's red flags there, we're not going to let you in. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing bigoted with that. So this has been a trend recently. You've seen a lot of these attacks, and a lot of these people end up going to Syria and then coming back in the country. And, yeah, you need to do better intelligence work, and you need to have a reasonable policy in dealing with these people. And then furthermore, now in this case, the next point I'm going to make doesn't necessarily apply because they used a van and they used knives to do their attack. But in many instances with similar cases, we see people having automatic weapons, or we see people, you know, using improvised explosive devices. And again, those are tactics that they learn and things that they learn when they're on the battlefield actually fighting in Syria, waging jihad. And you need to stop arming and backing those groups through Saudi Arabia and Turkey, as the U.S. has done and as Britain has done. The West more broadly has effectively been playing with fire. And we've been doing it since the 1980s when we armed and backed the Mujahideen to fight against the big bad Soviet Union. We said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, so hey, let's go with these Islamic fundamentalists, and it's fine because the Soviets are so bad and the communists are so bad that this isn't going to backfire if we arm people who will later go on to become the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. What? That happened? So we did it back then. We're doing it now. Sometimes directly funding the rebels in Syria, sometimes doing it, like I said, through Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and also just having economic deals with Saudi Arabia. They're the ones who are spreading this radical ideology all around the world. So, you know, when it comes to the Syrian refugee crisis, for example, Saudi Arabia says, we're not going to take any Syrian refugees, but here's what we'll do. We'll let them go into Europe, and then we'll pay for radical Salafist mosques there. So, yeah, they're the ones who are primarily responsible for this scourge of radical Islam. Recently, they're trying to do a deal with Indonesia. Indonesia is the most populous Muslim country in the world, but they're version of Islam is far less extreme than Salafi Islam. So what is Saudi Arabia trying to do? Hey, let's try to convert them all to be Salafists, to be Wahhabists. So they're pumping money in there, they're building schools, madrasas, and this is something they're doing the world over. And then, lo and behold, we see an uptick in these attacks, by the way, along with what else has made the problem worse? The war on terror. We've killed so many innocent people in the Muslim world that disaffected youth turn to these radical groups to get revenge and to feel like they're part of something bigger and all that stuff. So it's like a perfect storm of shittiness that has led to this increase in terrorism, and we're dealing with the fallout now. But I view the problem. I know this is going to sound silly, but bear with me because the explanation will make sense. I view the problem kind of like, remember that game Jenga? You have all the building blocks kind of going up, and then the tower becomes like wobbly at some point. Well, in order for one of these attacks to happen, all the Jenga pieces have to be in the right place. And if you just pull out one of those fucking pieces, the whole thing crumbles, and they don't end up doing these attacks. But unfortunately, like I said, we have the perfect storm of shittiness around the world that leads to an uptick in this stuff. So like I just said, the relationship between the West and Saudi Arabia is a huge problem in proliferating the spread of this ideology. We fund them, we back them with arms, they turn around and spread all these radical schools and mosques and fund the rebels directly, jihadists directly. So that's one of the key problems. Right off the bat, if you just pull out that one, Jenga block of let's unravel our relationship with Saudi and just have a neutral relationship, even just a neutral relationship, not even sanctions, but just a neutral relationship, you'd immediately cut down so much on terror attacks. That's one of the building blocks, is that our relationship. The second building block is just that they're the ones who spread Salafism, and it's something that's ascendant. The third building block would be the war on terror, and how the war on terror has led to this backlash that has led to an increase in this ideology. So if you pull the rug out from any of, or pull the Jenga block out on any portion here, you're going to see less of these attacks. But no, instead we keep our relationship with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia keeps spreading radical Islam, Salafism. We continue the war on terror, which further radicalizes people. So it's an endless cycle of a toxic Islamic fundamentalist ideology and the people who spread it being fully funded and fully armed, and us contributing to the problem by killing so many civilians, therefore turning people against the West. So, and the end result is what we see here, which is attacks that are seemingly endless. They just keep happening over and over and over, whether it's attacking an Ariana Grande concert or running over people with a van in this place, or doing it in this situation, or shooting people up, or using knives. And what we need to do is retool our approach. So I would say, first things first, stop arming and backing Saudi Arabia and Turkey while we're at it. We should unravel our close allegiance or alliance with them. We should increase, especially in Europe, we should have better vetting processes set up. Here in the U.S., we actually do a pretty good job. It's a very rigorous vetting process. There's like six or more government agencies that are involved. They do biometric screening. They go through records. They have multiple interviews. So here we do a pretty good job of that stuff. But Europe, they don't do as good of a job. So they need to retool their intelligence, retool their vetting process for letting people into the countries. Like I said, stop funding Saudi Arabia, stop backing them, unravel that relationship. Turn the war on terror around, get the West out of there, have others fight the battles. So, for example, like with the Syrian government, it should be the Syrian government and other Shia militias, and, you know, they should be the ones who are leading the fight against Wahhabism. I mean, they're in the region. They're the primary targets of it. So why not have them fight the battles and we get the fuck out of Dodge? We've already wasted trillions of dollars in the process and had so many of our own people die, and we've sparked a backlash against us, meaning the West. So that's another thing we could do. So basically, you need to totally retool your approach in how we're dealing with this, because this is a problem that's not going to go away until serious changes are made. And it goes without saying, I feel horrible for all the victims of this attack, and this has happened way too much. And the solutions that the current leaders are proposing are just crazy. I mean, they're just crazy. I mean, we should also just say up front, Theresa May and Donald Trump keep giving billions and billions of dollars when it comes to money and weapons to Saudi Arabia and to the people who spread this toxic ideology the most. But then furthermore, as we're going to cover in a second, Theresa May's response to this attack was immediately, hey, let's regulate the internet. So a crackdown on free speech as opposed to the reasonable solutions that I just laid out for you. So totally ineffectual leadership. They care about business as usual more than they care about the safety and security of people in their countries. And again, it's not going to stop. This is not going to stop until you do the things I laid out. And even then, you're still going to be dealing with the problem. Just, you're going to mitigate it more and you're going to have fewer incidents like this. But leadership right now appears to be totally unprepared to deal with a big global phenomenon like this. Okay. Now, we're going to go directly to Theresa May's response to this, and it's bad. Okay. British Prime Minister Theresa May gave a speech after the terror attack in London. Let's see what she had to say.
First, while the recent attacks are not connected by common networks, they are connected in one important sense. They are bound together by the single evil ideology of Islamist extremism that preaches hatred, sows division, and promotes sectarianism. It is an ideology that claims our Western values of freedom, democracy, and human rights are incompatible with the religion of Islam. It is an ideology that is a perversion of Islam and a perversion of the truth. Defeating this ideology is one of the great challenges of our time, but it cannot be defeated through military intervention alone. It will not be defeated through the maintenance of a permanent defensive counter-terrorism operation, however skillful its leaders and practitioners. It will only be defeated when we turn people's minds away from this violence and make them understand that our values, pluralistic British values, are superior to anything offered by the preachers and supporters of hate. Second, we cannot allow this ideology the safe space it needs to breed. Yet that is precisely what the internet and the big companies that provide internet-based services provide. We need to work with allied democratic governments to reach international agreements that regulate cyberspace to prevent the spread of extremist and terrorism planning. And we need to do everything we can at home to reduce the risks of extremism online.
Are you kidding me? This is her response to the terror attack. She came out after the attack and she said this. She immediately jumps into, you know, we got to deny this ideology a safe place or safe space online. The problem is the internet. I mean, we really got to regulate the internet to make sure that this problem, you know, doesn't spread. This is authoritarianism 101. You take a serious issue like terrorism and people's security and you do a bait and switch. Like, oh, yeah, that problem is really, really bad. Anyway, hand over more of your civil liberties and let me regulate your free speech and your free expression. But don't worry, don't worry. We're only going to regulate the internet to try to stop terrorists. That's all we're going to do. No, no, no. This is the same thing that happened with the Patriot Act here in the NSA and our giant spying apparatus. Is they act like, oh, what? You're not in favor of this? I guess you're with the terrorists. I guess you don't want us to stop terrorism. Next time there's another 9/11, look in the mirror because it's your fault. But then they use this spying apparatus, this surveillance apparatus, to keep everybody in check and collect everybody's metadata and destroy your right to privacy and your protection from unreasonable search and seizure. The NSA, they were well known for what they called LoveInt, which was short for Love Intelligence, which would mean people at the NSA were spying on all their ex-boyfriends and girlfriends if they worked for the NSA. Why? Of course, because it's human nature. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. You give people the ability to spy on anybody at any time and collect everybody's metadata, they're going to do it. And that's exactly what happened. They did do it. And they abused their power. They abused it. So now they're taking this terrorist incident and they're using it to do the next step, which is what governments have wanted to do for years now. They're using it to say, well, look, we have to regulate the internet. We can't allow speech that's sympathetic to terrorism on the internet. By the way, how would you regulate that? What if somebody goes out there and says, oh, a lot of this is blowback. A lot of these attacks are it's a backlash and it's revenge and retribution for fucked up Western foreign policy that killed people's aunts and uncles and radicalized people further. Is that something that under Theresa May's regulated internet, somebody would be allowed to say? Or would that be considered, you're doing apologetics for jihadists, and that, you know, you say stuff like that, maybe you're an enemy of the state, we're going to have to ban that. You're not allowed to say that. It's an unpopular opinion. We're not going to let you say that. You think it's really only going to be used for, we need to regulate the internet just to stop the terrorists? Well, no, then terrorist becomes, okay, we're going to use it to stop other crimes, so not just terrorism, now other crimes, and eventually becomes drug crimes, then eventually becomes thought crimes. You know, as much as I despise a lot of outlets that spread actual fake news, that's the price you pay for freedom. There are going to be some people who are on the fringe who say preposterous things, but then, you know, you also get brilliant outlets, great outlets that do real journalism and real reporting that you'd never get in the mainstream media. Outlets like Truthdig or Truthout, or Democracy Now. What they would do is they would use this as a pretense to go against anybody that questions establishment power. So you start out by saying, hey, InfoWars, you know, you actually do a lot of fake news. You say Sandy Hook is a hoax and Obama is a literal demon and WorldNet Daily thinks Obama's demonic, all that. So you start by saying, well, these guys, come on, what are we going to do? We got to get rid of them, not fake news. It goes from let's stop terrorists to let's stop them, and then it goes let's stop, you know, progressive, independent media who are holding people in the establishment accountable. So, no, you don't give the government that much power because they will inevitably abuse it for their own good. And they'll try to suppress any information that makes them look bad, too. If you allow them to regulate the internet like that, I mean, what do you think is going to happen? There's going to be a story about how, hey, look, Theresa May or Donald Trump just killed 100 civilians in a bombing that they did in Syria where they thought they were killing al-Qaeda, and they killed women and children all over the place. They're going to make an argument that, no, we can't let that story be out there on the internet because then that would actually lead to some people being radicalized and turning to jihadist groups. So what are we going to do? We have to try to prevent the increase in these groups. I mean, that's the whole point, right, is we're doing this to try to stop terrorism, so I'm going to have to ban the facts of this story and not allow this story out on the internet. It's such a bad idea, and it's so Orwellian, and it's so authoritarian, and she is fucking shameless to go out there and immediately make this point. And hilarious, she says she likes to play the fake tough guy approach of, like, we need to call it by its name, Islamist extremism. Except, wait a second, you're not calling it by its name, because this isn't just Islamist extremism. This is Salafism. This is Wahhabism. Why don't you call it by that name? Why don't you call it by its more accurate name? You know, it's hilarious. People like Donald Trump and the right-wingers like to say it's radical Islamic terrorism or Islamist extremism. We're the ones who will keep it real, and the liberals are not going to keep it real. But hold on, you're not keeping it real, because this isn't just broadly radical Islamic terrorism, because that would mean you're, you know, including fundamentalist Sunnis, but Shias too, and other branches of Islam. But that's not what this is. This is very specifically Salafism. This is Wahhabism. This is jihadism. So, but you're not naming it that. Why aren't you naming it that? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because one of the West's top allies is Saudi Arabia, the home of Salafism and Wahhabism. But they'd rather call it Islamist extremism, and they'd rather call it radical Islam, because then it's broad enough where they like to do the bait and switch from time to time of, Iran is the number one state sponsor of terror. Remember that? They always say that. Iran's the number one state sponsor. Wait, what? No, they're not. No, they're not. It's not Shia suicide bombers. Iran is Shia. This isn't what we're dealing with here. The influx is Wahhabism and Salafism, ultra-fundamentalist Sunnis. But you can't say that. Why? Ooh, you don't want to affect the oil partner, the business partner. You know, Theresa May's doing, just like Donald Trump, doing business deals and weapons deals with Saudi Arabia, and then she's going to turn around and lecture you about terror. Let me tell you the problem here. We're going to fix it by regulating your free expression on the internet. How about we regulate it by you not arming Saudi Arabia anymore, by the West not arming the home of fundamentalism, the home of Wahhabism and Salafism, the home of the real radical Islamic terrorism? How about you stop arming and backing them? So these guys are just, they're shameless. They're fucking shameless. And then also another thing that we mentioned in the other segment, a lot of people in the UK are going to fight on the battlefield in Syria as rebels alongside jihadists, and then they come right back in the country. Wait, what? You want to talk about a failure of intelligence work? Now, that's not, you have to understand something, guys. That's not the same thing as like Trump saying, oh, we're a total and complete shutdown of Muslims coming in the U.S. Because that is a bigoted approach, because you're saying, hey, 1.5 billion people, 1.6 billion plus people, we're just going to treat you like you're Al-Qaeda. That's crazy. That's crazy. But when somebody else says, hey, why don't we take an extra look and we should have a red flag next to all these people coming back from a country that has a hot war going on, a civil war going on, where they're all going to fight on the side of the rebels, where at least 60% of the rebels are jihadists, hey, maybe a red flag and we don't let those people in the country. If you don't have a rigorous vetting process for those people, then that's just a failure of intelligence. It's not a sign of bigotry to say, hey, a double look at the fucking jackasses coming back from Syria. So you need better vetting. You need to stop arming and funding and backing Saudi Arabia and the people who are spreading this ideology. And furthermore, yes, we need to stop. The war on terror just hasn't worked. It's like the war on drugs. We waged the war on drugs. They say at the time, we're going to limit or eliminate the scourge of drug use. Well, now it's just as bad. It's equally as bad as it was, if not worse. So you failed. It didn't work. You're just wrong about, oh, this will happen if we do this. But that didn't happen, so you're just incorrect. What do you want me to tell you? You're wrong. Same thing with this. 2001, 2003, yeah, we're gonna do a war on terror. We're going to, like, stop terror. Well, it's worse now. It's worse. You failed. What you did not work. And then every other day we get stories coming out of Syria, come out of Iraq. Oh, whoops, look at that. We killed 100 civilians. Whoops, Donald Trump in his first military action as president killed a fucking 8-year-old American girl. This isn't working. This is making the problem worse. So, yes, you have to switch up the way you do the war on terror. We've been doing military interventions out the wazoo. We're doing 7 different ones right now. So the answer is not military intervention. The answer is intelligence work. The answer is police work. The answer is letting the people in the region whose battle it is to fight the battle. Let the Syrian government fight the battle. Let Shia militias fight the battle. Let the Kurds fight the battle. Let them fight the people who are radical Islamists. That's what you do. You let them fight it. We can give them assistance. We can give them aid, humanitarian and otherwise. But yes, the main thing we need to do is just stop arming and backing the exporters of this ideology, the ones who spread it the most. And yes, increase the vetting process in Europe. Theirs isn't as good as the U.S. In the U.S., we have very solid, you know, vetting process, multiple different government agencies involved, biometric screening, you name it, J-check records, all that stuff, interviews over and over. Takes like a year on average for somebody to get in here. There, it's less rigorous. So there's a lot of stuff that can be done. None of it is the Orwellian authoritarian approach that Theresa May is throwing out there, where she's saying, yeah, no, let's just regulate speech on the internet. How about that? Does that fool anybody at this point? Like, is anybody like, oh, yeah, no, totally. It's a good idea, and I'm sure they're just going to use it for, you know, the purest of intentions and the purest motives here, where they're only going to go after extremists. And by the way, how do you even determine that? Like, even among actual radical Islamists, how do you determine what's just somebody who's super fundamentalist who would never do an attack versus somebody who would do an attack? Like, how do you, like, there's genuine free speech issues there, too. It's like if you're online and somebody's a white nationalist versus a neo-Nazi, like, okay, is it illegal to be a white nationalist? No. Is it even illegal to be a neo-Nazi? No. What's illegal is if they were to carry out physical acts of violence against people, then that's illegal. If you just say, hey, the ideology's bad enough where we're going to arrest you for the ideology, that's a thought crime. That's a thought crime, and that's anti-freedom. And then you're no longer living in a free democracy which has free speech and free expression and freedom of the press. And so, like, how do you even if you have the purest of intentions in trying to regulate the internet to look out for terrorism and stuff, what do you do? What do you do? Hey, we're going to shut down the very conservative mosques. Okay, but then wouldn't you also want to shut down white nationalist enclaves? Super conservative and right-wing outlets in that respect? I mean, I'm just saying, if you want to open that door to we're just going to shut it down if it's extreme sounding, well, what's the line between extreme sounding? What constitutes freedom of speech versus what's not freedom of speech? I mean, only really direct threats of violence. I'm going to kill this person at this time, at this place. That's against the law in the U.S., and that's against the law everywhere. But outside of that, what are you going to do? You know? Like, I don't know. This is profoundly against civil liberties and civil rights and freedom of expression, which are the things that the West ironically holds up as the beacon of what makes us great. But here's Theresa May saying, no, let's just regulate the internet in response to this because, you know, shutting down people's free expression and free speech, that's a good thing. I'm sure that'll work out for the best. No, it's not going to prevent any attacks like this. You know, it's not going to move us in the right direction. And in any way, it's just going to take away people's freedoms, and you're doing it under the guise of protecting people. Okay. All right, let me take a quick break. When we come back, President Trump responded to the terror attack, and then we will get into later on the Democrats and their Russia march. Uh-oh. So let's talk about all that and more. Stay right there, guys.
you with the left, the left. You will fake, so one bone grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so one bone grab you with the left.
Welcome,
the
welcome,
left.
Welcome back, y'all.
Like
okay. President Trump responded to the terror attack in London. Here's what he said on Twitter. At least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and Mayor of London says there is no reason to be alarmed. Quote, no reason to be alarmed. We must stop being politically correct and get down to the business of security for our people. If we don't get smart, it will only get worse. You just gave $110 billion in weapons to Saudi Arabia. Shut the fuck up. You don't get to do that. No, you don't get to send billions and billions of dollars worth of weapons to the home of radical Islamic terrorism and then turn around and go, oh, look at this radical Islamic terrorism. Sad. We have to stop being politically correct. You're right, we do. We have to stop being politically correct. You know what's taboo and what's the politically correct thing to do in the establishment? Keep selling weapons to Saudi Arabia and keep doing economic deals with them, even though they're a terror state that behead people for sorcery and witchcraft and treat women as second-class citizens and say all atheists are terrorists. So you want to be politically incorrect? Tell the establishment to fuck off and tell them we're not doing weapons deals and business deals with Saudi Arabia. Like, he keeps portraying himself as this straight shooter and this truth teller, but you are the biggest establishment bitch I've ever seen. On every issue, I want you to do something. You're like, huh, yes, I'd love to be your water boy establishment. Can I please blow more neocons in the deep state? So you're not a truth teller. You're not a straight shooter. You're an absolute moron. You don't get.
We didn't stop being politically correct. Anyway, did you guys see that tremendous deal I made with Saudi Arabia, who pay for the building of Salafist mosques all over the world and have the same ideology as ISIS? And fund jihadists directly in Syria and Yemen. We need to stop being politically correct.
Okay, but on top of what I just described there, he's also just lying. I need you to know that. He's either lying or he's been duped by right-wing media. Because when he said that first tweet, he said at least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and Mayor of London says there is, quote, no reason to be alarmed. Well, first of all, if he were to say that, that's somebody saying, hey, in the face of terror, don't let the terrorists win. Their goal is to terrorize you, to make you feel terror, to alter your behavior, to try to make you not feel safe and secure in your own country. Don't let them win. Be resilient. Be strong in the face of adversity. We're bigger and better than these people. Carry on with your chin up high. So if he were to say that, there'd be nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But he didn't actually say that. He didn't actually say that. In fact, I have his exact quote here for you, and you tell me whether or not President Fuckface is taking him out of context. The mayor of London said the following, quote, Londoners will see an increased police presence today and over the course of the next few days. No reason to be alarmed. So Donald Trump's tweet, I'm going to read it one more time, and take note of how, what he's implying and how he's portraying it. He said, at least 7 dead and 48 wounded in terror attack, and Mayor of London says there is no reason to be alarmed. In other words, he's saying that the Mayor of London is downplaying the threat of radical Islamic terrorism. That's what he's saying. He's saying, oh, look how out of touch this guy is. He doesn't realize the threat we're facing. He's blind to the reality. He's unreasonable. Look at him. Why is he downplaying it? Why is he downplaying radical Islamic terrorism? He said there's no reason to be alarmed. Now, you heard the real context. He's saying no reason to be alarmed about the increased police presence. Because that's what's happened is directly after one of these attacks. We have the increased police presence. So don't worry about that. Don't be alarmed about that. Don't be alarmed when you see police officers with guns and stuff all around, because, by the way, they're not used to that in the UK. I don't think they normally carry guns, police. Only if there's a special incident where they need the guns, then they'll show up with the guns. So he's saying, don't worry, you're going to see these officers with guns. So Trump is, again, either lying or he was duped by right-wing media. But let's get down to the heart of it. Why would he do that? Why would he take him out of context like that? Or why would, let's be fair, why would either right-wing media take him out of context like that or Trump himself take the London mayor out of context like that? You know who the London mayor is? His name is Sadiq Khan. He's Muslim. So I'm sure it's just a coincidence that Donald Trump is trying to smear a Muslim mayor as soft on Islamic terrorism. Don't be naive. Don't be blind. Don't do apologetics for this garbage. And yes, this is bigotry. That's what that is. In context, it's super clear what he's saying. But he's trying to portray like he's soft on terror. He doesn't see the problem. I wonder why he doesn't see the problem. Maybe he doesn't see the problem because of who he is. Look at his name. So this is sick. This is loathsome. And this is pathetic. And by the way, I haven't even gotten to the saddest part. After everybody and their fucking mother called out Donald Trump, hey, man, that's not what he said. That's not what he said. And Sadiq Khan, or at least his office, responded like, look, we don't have time to respond to smears. We're busy doing real work with real people here, taking care of the emergency situation we're dealing with. He released a statement that was along those lines. What did Trump do? Came out, and just right before I came on air here, doubled down. And basically said, weak excuse from the mayor of London. No, you're the one making the weak excuses. What the fuck is it about you? Has Donald Trump ever said, I'm wrong. I'm wrong about that. I apologize. I took him out of context. No, he's incapable of doing it because he's a fucking man-child and he has a low IQ. So, you know, there was another article. I didn't prep the story or anything, but it basically compares the response of all other world leaders and then Trump's. All other world leaders, you know, President of Mexico, Prime Minister of Canada, you name it, they all say after this attack in London, we are with the people of London now more than ever. Be resilient in this tough time. Like the Prime Minister of Canada said, if you're a Canadian citizen and you're there, you can call this number or go to this place and, you know, there will be accommodation set up for you. So it's all world leaders being leaders and responding rationally and sympathetically. And then it's Trump berating the mayor of London after London was attacked. Does that sound like leadership? No, that sounds like stupidity and trying to score political points by taking a Muslim mayor out of context and trying to smear him as a terrorist sympathizer. He's gross. He's grotesque. He's an idiot. I mean, that goes without saying, but there you go. That's how our great president responded to a disgusting terrorist attack in London. Okay. All right, one more. What am I saying, one more? One more before we get to another one directly after that. President Trump shoved his foot in his mouth this weekend in response to the London terror attack. So let me show you this tweet here. This is from the ACLU. Ignore their response first. Just look at his tweet. It says, we need to be smart, vigilant, and tough. We need the courts to give us back our rights. We need the travel ban as an extra level of safety. So the ACLU said there, now you can take a look at that, it says, glad we both agree the ban is a ban. Now, why is this newsworthy? Well, Trump's lawyers just spent months in court arguing that his ban wasn't a ban. The whole crux of their argument as to why they should be allowed to do this ban is that no, it's not a ban. So you guys have it twisted. you know, it's not a ban, it's a restraint on temporary travel in the... I come up with these Orwellian phrases where they try to twist it. Not a ban, it's that. So they spent months in court arguing this, and Trump comes out, one tweet undermines it and destroys the whole argument and their credibility. He's like, no, yeah, it's a ban. We need to put the travel ban back in place. He also goes on to say, by the way, we shouldn't do the watered-down version, the second version, which they had to do to try to give it another shot at making it legal, even though it still didn't pass that bar. But they had to water it down a little bit to try to make it legal because it was too explicit and illegal and unconstitutional, the first one, and the wording was obviously unconstitutional. But he says, we don't need the politically correct watered-down one either. We need the original one. So he's just destroying all the work his lawyers did, trying to come up, do their sophistry to come up with an argument that seems mildly convincing about how, no, it should be allowed because it's not a ban. And one of the points that a lot of the judges made when hearing this case is, look, who are we kidding? Trump said when he was on the campaign trail, we want to ban Muslims. We want a total and complete shutdown of Muslims. And then later on, Rudy Giuliani admitted in a moment of honesty on air on Fox News, like, he called me and asked me how to legally do a Muslim ban. And so they go, who are we kidding? We got to look at the intent of the law here and how it's crafted and what the purpose is. And that's what the fucking purpose is. Now, clearly what they do is they exempt Saudi Arabia and the rich Muslim countries that we have business deals with, but they're trying to shut out basically all poor Muslims from don't have money poor Muslims from coming to the U.S. And they're like, you can't do that's just clearly unconstitutional and illegal. You can't do that. And especially you can't do that unilaterally. I'm just going to decide. I'm going to decree this. What are you, fucking emperor? That you think that's how this works? So, such a jackass. His lawyer spent months saying it's not a ban. He's like, we need the travel ban. Did I say ban? Ban. And by the way, final point here. How many terror attacks have there been from the countries, from people from the countries on the ban list? Donut. Zero. No terror attacks from the people from the countries on the ban list. And he's saying we need that to be safe. And furthermore, he also just gave $100 billion in weapons to Saudi Arabia. Over $100 billion, actually. So here he is feigning concern about, we got to stop being politically correct. Call it radical Islamic terrorism. Call it what it is. Anyway, I just gave over $100 billion in weapons to the home of radical Islamic terrorism. Aren't I so politically incorrect? No, you are a politically correct bitch, and you bent to the will of the establishment, and you fell in line like a good little water boy, like a puppet. So you're not a truth teller. You're not a straight shooter. You're not a macho man. You're a little bitch who bends to the will of the establishment as you scapegoat and blame other people and do bigoted policies. So, you know, it's amazing at this point to me that anybody defends this guy. I mean, really? You're going to fucking sit there and talk about how we got to get tough, we got to be tough, and give Saudi Arabia over $100 billion in weapons? Where do you think those weapons are going to go? They're going to use them to slaughter women and children in Yemen, as they've been doing, by the way, and blockade the country. At least 14 million people are starving to death. But then also they're going to funnel the weapons to militants in Syria and Yemen. Who are the militants in Syria and Yemen? Sunni fundamentalists. Who are the Sunni fundamentalists? ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So, please, our relationship, the West's relationship with Saudi Arabia, has been one of the key factors in leading to more of these terror attacks. And also, by the way, you massacring innocent people over and over in the Middle East has been one of the things that leads to that. You just killed over 100 civilians in Syria, in a bombing. What do you think? People are going to look at that and go, it's cool, you killed my brother, I'm not going to try to get revenge on the U.S., No, that breeds radicalization. That's when they turn to the extremist groups who say, we'll protect you and we'll attack the big bad Americans. So he's so wrong about so much, but he loves to pretend like, we're going to be tough and strong and vigilant, and I'm going to give more money to radical Islamic terrorists as I pretend to be against radical Islam. And if you were, you shouldn't do a banned list and ban people from whole countries. How fucking stupid is that? Only a tiny sliver of people who would come in from even the worst countries in terms of offenders, right? Even the smallest sliver of them would be a problem. The overwhelming majority of anybody from any country wouldn't be a problem. So it's stupid to do a ban list anyway. But if you were going to do a ban list, country number one would be Saudi Arabia. But no, they're exempt. But let's ban from six countries where nobody committed a terror attack from those countries and pretend like we're being macho men as we funnel money to radical Islamic terrorists. It's just pathetic. Okay. I'm going to depress you even further now. President Trump is apparently getting his political ideas from very credible and respectable sources. Let's see who that is.
Yeah, I think that President Trump, like I said last night, was being very consistent with his campaign promise. He promised that he was going to do this. I don't think this is a deal that anybody should be crying about. Like we said, it's non-binding. And the United States is already a clean energy, oil, and gas leader. Mm-hmm. So we can keep doing what we're doing. We can keep reducing our emissions. Why would we, in fact, put ourselves at an economic disadvantage, giving and subsidizing an economic windfall to other countries in sort of a, you know, a climate redistribution of wealth scheme? It makes no sense to me. I think he did the brave and courageous thing. And in fact, I told him that this morning at 8 a.m. when he called. And I spoke to him about it. And this was something very much so on his mind. But he seems
Wait a
like,
second. Who called you?
The president.
Why?
That's what climate change, taxes.
I think they buried the lead here.
Yeah, he just tried to slip that in there. Maybe it happens all the time. But he said he loves the five, terrific show. Said to say hello to all of you. Yeah, the co-feature.
Oh, my
co-feature.
I would normally make a joke here, but I'm just really depressed by this. I mean, I believe her. There's no reason not to believe her. You know, Alex Jones, he said, I talk to the president from time to time. Me and him talk on the phone about a variety of things. Trump is exactly what he appears to be, you know. Like, there are times he stumbled on the correct strategy. Like, he just happened to stumble upon it in his blithering idiocy. And is just amorphous, directionless existence. Like, he stumbled on it. Like, oh, I'll pretend to be anti-establishment. Maybe I'll win that way. Oops, look, I won. But he is what he appears to be. Like, he's a man-child. He's not that bright. And he looks up to a lot of really, really unserious pundits on TV. I mean, could you imagine for a second, like, if I was president, would it ever occur to me, quick, somebody get me Lawrence O'Donnell on the phone. I have thoughts on policy and I need to talk to him. No. No. Well, first of all, Lawrence O'Donnell is more intelligent than fucking Kimberly Guilfoyle. Let's be real. But even so, I would never fucking, you're the president. You have every available opportunity and outlet to go to. When you're thinking about policy, why wouldn't you be in the room full of fucking climate scientists when making the decision on climate science? Why wouldn't you be in a room full of the best economists in the world? Why wouldn't you be in a room full of all the top healthcare experts in the world? Call in the people who crafted, who created, you know, or are experts in the British healthcare system, the Canadian healthcare system, the South Korean healthcare system. If I'm not mistaken, I think the people who did the South Korean one are still alive. So go, like, you, there's so many things you could do. You got to talk to the experts. He's calling fucking second-rate Fox hosts. Even among Fox hosts, she's a second-rate one. And he's talking to her. Like, oh, and she, look at her, fucking all smug. Like, and that's what the president called me. What? No big deal. What? But she's doing it for real. She's acting like, no, I'm trying to. I'm humble bragging, but whatever. So the president called me. I'm serious, right? Mommy and daddy, look what happened. The president calls me for policy ideas. And that's why the country's in so much trouble. These are not serious people. These are hardcore ideologues who drank the far-right Kool-Aid a long time ago. They're not interested in truth. They're interested in their narrative and playing for their fucking team. and these are the people, because he watches, there are reports he watches up to 6 hours a day of cable news. So we shouldn't even really be surprised by this. He, all the people on TV, that's who, he's yearning for the love and affection and attention from the generals, the neocons in the deep state, his Goldman Sachs advisors, and people on cable news. Those are the only people, back when he was doing rallies, he wanted the love of the rally crowds. Now there's very few rallies anymore. Every now and then he does one, which is more than any other president has done when they're actually a sitting president. Every now and then he does them, but most of the time he's trying to get that love and attention and affection from generals, neocons in the deep state, his Goldman Sachs advisors, and people on cable news, because that's who's in his circle. And across the board, all those people have horrible ideas. Goldman Sachs, corrupt as can be, going to bias everything in favor of Wall Street. The generals, always going to want more war. Neocons in the deep state, always going to want more war. Cable news, always going to be vacuous and stupid, especially on Fox News. So, but these are the people who he's looking for the attention. So to him, like, he's excited when he talks to Kimberly Guilfoyle. I see her on TV every day. I see her on TV every day.
We're doing big things here, you know. I'm doing big things. I'm president and stuff, and like, you want to come see like the secret UFO files? Like a fucking little schoolgirl, man. The president gets policy advice from shitty Fox News hosts. The president gets policy advice from shitty Fox News hosts. Let that sink in.
Okay. Okay, now we're going to move along to do I want to do the Afghanistan one? I think I'm going to hold off on that. Yeah, let's go to the Democrats. Check in with what the Democrats are doing. Let's check in with the Democrats and see what they're currently up to. Thousands in U.S. march for truth regarding Trump-Russia ties. Crowds demand a fair investigation from coast to coast. They're doing marches specifically around this issue. Should there be an investigation? Sure. Sure. Should all of the Democratic focus and energy be on beating this dead horse? Everything, Russia. Everything goes back to Russia, Russia. You're hurting your own electoral chances. I can't. This is the same as, remember when right-wingers would always scream Benghazi, 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 to the point where most Americans would say, shut the fuck up with your fucking Benghazi. Well, now it's Russia, Russia, Russia. And people who are in that corporate Democratic, establishment Democratic bubble, they think like everybody in the country is like, they're sitting around a dinner table in Topeka and they're going, Russia, you know what I'm saying? That Vladimir Putin, hear me, dog? That's not what they're doing. People are worrying about how to pay the bills. They have health care costs. They have student loan debt. They have jobs that don't pay them enough, don't pay them what they're worth, jobs that don't give people a living wage. We're wasting our tax money overseas in 7 unnecessary interventions. We're doing a shadow war in Africa right now. That never got approved through Congress. Like, what? So real problems, and the Democrats have based their whole messaging apparatus is now solely based on this. And then they wonder, wait, this is crazy. Why is it that Donald Trump is polling at like 35%, and we're right there with him? We're right there with him. What's going on here? He's such a clown. He's a fucking reality star buffoon who's signing bills that have like a 7% approval rating. Remember when he signed away everybody's internet privacy rights? He's doing incredibly unpopular things. He signed an executive order that allowed coal companies to pollute the waterways, poisoning water for people, for women, kids.
And the Democrats, instead of building around, oh my God, look at what he did here. What the fuck? Really? You're going to sign a bill that only 7% of Americans support? What the fuck is wrong with you? You're going to unnecessarily drop the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan? What are you doing? You're going to attack the Syrian government when you said you weren't going to get involved in Syria? What the fuck? You could argue about those things and take them down a few pegs and win in the realm of messaging, or you could argue what you're for. Hey, we want Medicare for all. We want a living wage. We want to end the wars. We want to end the drug war. But they're not doing any of that. Russia. 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 So we have the March for Truth. That's what this is, the Russia thing. And then we have Nancy Pelosi doing resistance rallies. But in their resistance rallies, they're not even arguing for Medicare for all or what's our traditional liberal progressive priorities. They're just saying, we're not him. Trump bad, us good. Trump bad, me good. So people, you're not going to get people excited when you argue, Obamacare is good enough. Shut the fuck up and take it. I know there's still millions of people who are uninsured, and we still have medical bankruptcies as one of the top causes of bankruptcies, but just shut up and take it. Okay, let me give you some of the article here, and then we'll discuss further. Thousands of protesters took to the streets across dozens of U.S. cities on Saturday to tell President Donald Trump they are not his comrades. Ooh, some red baiting from Huffington Post. That's cute. The March for Truth, led by a coalition of grassroots organizers, took place in cities including Washington, D.C., New York, Boston, and Portland. Demonstrators demanded that the investigation into the Trump campaign's alleged ties to Russian officials be handled in a fair and impartial manner. Organizers said that includes the creation of an independent commission and the release of Trump's tax returns, along with greater government transparency with the public. They also called for criminal prosecution if wrongdoing is discovered. D.C. saw the most sizable crowd starting in the morning, where protesters spelled out, "Investigate Trump," on the lawn of the National Mall. In New York City, demonstrators gathered at Foley Square, where they listened to speakers including Javier Munoz, however you pronounce that, of Broadway's Hamilton. The crowd then marched down Broadway chanting, "Resist," as they went. If I had to craft a protest that was more out of touch with regular people, the fucking guy from Hamilton is there, you resist! Investigate Russia! Yeah! By the way, one thing I never understood. You have 8,000 things right in front of your fucking face, but you have to, but the corporate Democrats are insistent on arguing for the thing that involves innuendo and assumptions and like filling in the blanks in your head and speculations of treason, which is a preposterous claim. As much as I hate Trump, let's be serious. That's not, no, there's no fucking treason. So instead of saying, oh my God, Trump is over $1 billion in debt. Personal debt, and it's mostly held on Wall Street. This guy's a puppet of Wall Street. Holy shit, he put Goldman Sachs in his administration. They wrote his tax plan. And then they're the ones who announced it to the public. Wow. What the fuck? That's right in front of your face. It's all there. Those are all facts. We already know those things. He's over $1 billion in personal debt. Guys, that's even worse than the corruption of other politicians. Because with other politicians, at least it's campaign debt. So it's not personal debt. Campaign debt, they still do the bidding of their donors, right? So if for campaign debt, they're still beholden to their donors. But you're even more beholden if it's personal debt, because you could sit down and renegotiate the personal debt. You're going to talk to people from Wall Street. They'll say, look, I know you owe us $14 million, Donald Trump, but what if we cut that to $3 million and you give us what we want in terms of this deregulation deal, or you give us what we want in terms of letting us continue to shove billions of dollars in offshore tax havens? Or what if you give us our corporate welfare check, subsidies? How about that? How about you have the Department of Justice get off our ass because they're investigating us for fraud or whatever? Get them all, hey, then we'll cut what you owe. So the scandals are right in front of you, you fucking idiots, and you're going to the one that hasn't been proven yet, and there's no evidence of yet. He hasn't even done a single policy that benefits Russia, but you're stuck up. Russia, Russia, Russia. What about Saudi Arabia? He registered 8 new businesses in Saudi Arabia during the campaign, And then look at that. Lo and behold, he just did a $400 billion economic deal with them. $110 billion worth is weapons to a terror state that has the same ideology as ISIS. Not a single Democrat said, Saudi Arabia, we need an investigation on Saudi Arabia. What happened in the back channels with Saudi Arabia when they made the deal for the 8 new businesses? He registered 8 new businesses, and then he did a deal that helps them out and is the exact wrong policy for the American people. We're cuddling up to a terror state and giving them money and weapons. They behead people in the public square. They're a theocracy. They're an absolute authoritarian dictatorship. We're cuddling up with them, and Donald Trump did it for personal reasons because he has personal businesses registered there, and he cares about his golf courses. He cares about his businesses. So where's the back channel with Saudi Arabia where you made this deal? Let's do an investigation on that. Nope. Nobody says it. Why? Russia. Got to go to Russia. And look, let's be serious. It's hit the point of bigotry. Like, the Democrats are now so fervently on this Russia bandwagon and anti-Russia that they're now just flat out hawkish, and they're calling for military escalation with them, like Rachel Maddow did, by saying, hey, if you pull NATO troops off Russia's border, Putin has a pee-pee tape on you. So meaning, keep the NATO troops on Russia's border. Be more hawkish. Rachel Maddow's for escalating with Russia militarily. A lot of other Democrats, as they called it a cyber Pearl Harbor, what happened with Russia during the election, where they allegedly, no evidence, hasn't been proven, gave WikiLeaks the DNC emails. So Hillary Clinton's own words get released, and the corporate Democrats say, cyber Pearl Harbor, let's escalate to war, maybe, over this with Russia. It's at the point of bigotry. Like, there's anti-Russian bigotry in the Democratic Party. And to the point where people had to come out who were, like, founders of this movement and say, no, we're not anti-Russia. What? You're not the whole fucking thing is built on Russia. There's a secret cabal of Russians running our country, and our president is a puppet of the Russians. What does that sound like? There's a secret cabal of Jews who are running everything. And we're just being brave truth-tellers by calling out all the Jews who secretly run everything. There's a secret cabal of Russians, and if you don't see it, maybe you're working with the Russian government. Oh, you don't see the Jews running everything? Maybe you're working with the Jews. Maybe. We've seen this. Come on, man. Come on. It's just not rational. It's not logical. And you're driving your own party off the fucking cliff because real people have real problems, and you're not addressing them. Every minute spent talking about Russia is a minute you're not talking about a living wage. It's a minute you're not talking about how half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. You're not talking about the 600,000 homeless people in this country, 57,000 homeless veterans in America. You're not talking about the 7 different interventions we're doing, the $100 billion a year that we waste on 800 military bases. You're not talking about health care bills being one of the top causes of bankruptcy, which is crazy. You're not talking about the millions of people who are uninsured and don't have health care. So you're not calling for Medicare for all. You're not calling for a living wage. You're not calling for ending the drug war and stopping the mass incarceration crisis. You're not calling for free college and addressing the student loan debt crisis. So you're not talking about real issues. By the way, that's why Justice Democrats are here. We're here to fight for the right things. You know who we're running. Go to justicedemocrats.com, read about our candidates, read our platform, see what they stand for, and understand we're doing a drive where we're trying to raise $500,000 for our candidates for June. So by the end of June, we want to raise $500,000, and your help is greatly appreciated. Our candidates take no corporate money and no PAC money, so we rely on small donations from regular people because those are the people we want to represent. We don't want to represent corporations and PACs. We're not going to represent corporations and billionaires. So we need small donations from you. Go to justicedemocrats.com/donate, and let's end this madness. A Democratic Party that needs to be focused on the issues, focused on the workers, focused on regular people, focused on making this country a better country. That's what we're focused on. Medicare for all, living wage, free college, end the wars, end the drug war, re-regulate Wall Street. Real issues. Let's stop with the Russia madness and driving the party off a cliff, and let's bring the party back to sanity
justicedemocrats.com/donate. Okay. Let's do another Justice Democrats related story. Shit. I got a little voice issue today. Voice issues, I should say. Okay, here we go. Guess what? Corporate Democrat Joe Manchin weighed in on Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and I think you see where this is going. So this is from The Hill. Senator Joe Manchin voiced support Thursday for President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord, arguing that the agreement did not ensure a balance between our environment and the economy. While I believe that the United States and the world should continue to pursue a cleaner energy future, I do not believe that the Paris Agreement ensures a balance between our environment and the economy, Manchin said in a statement. Manchin, who represents a state that relies heavily on coal, on the coal industry that Trump won by big margins in November, advocated finding a deal that would protect the nation's consumers as well as energy-producing states like West Virginia. So there you go. Joe Manchin is Trump's a bitch. Yeah, I said it, because that's what he is. Did you know he only voted against 3 of Trump's 16 picks for his cabinet? He only voted against 3 of 16. With friends like that, you don't need enemies. Is that the way the saying goes? I don't even know if that's the way the saying goes. With friends like that, why have enemies? With friends like that, you don't need enemies. Whatever. You get what I'm saying. This is what you get with corporate Joe Manchin. He's always going to do the bidding of the corporations. So, you know, big oil, the coal industry, fossil fuel industry, they're the ones who are, don't do the Paris Agreement because that would cut into our profits. What? This isn't about workers in West Virginia. If Joe Manchin cared about workers in West Virginia, would they have poison water that women and children are drinking and they're drinking? Paula Swearingen, the Justice Democrat candidate who's running against Joe Manchin, she talks about that. People in her family have had black lung, died young as a result of working in the mines their whole lives. If Joe Manchin cared about workers, why wouldn't he be on the side of the EPA regulating and saying, no, the business owners need to provide reasonable safety accommodations for these workers who are having their lives destroyed by their working conditions? People act like Joe Manchin, yeah, coal mine, he's for the coal miners, he's for the regular guy. If he was for the regular guy, their water wouldn't be running purple and orange and black, and they wouldn't be dying young of black lung now, would they? Joe Manchin is not for the little guy. He's not for working people. He's for the CEOs. He's for the barons. That's who he's for, and his voting record proves it because he votes that way over and over and over and over. He takes money from big donors, and he does their bidding at the expense of regular working West Virginians. Paula Swearingen is for the worker. She's for regular people. She's not for the corporate overlords. She's not for your water being poisoned. She's not for no regulation and people dying young of black lung as a result of that. Joe Manchin doesn't even want the EPA to be allowed to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. So the EPA has no business doing environmental protection, according to Joe Manchin. And he's busy, you know, being Trump's water boy. So how sad is that, man? He's against the Paris Climate Agreement. By the way, Paula Swearingen for Medicare for All. Everybody in West Virginia, a lot of people here don't have health care. Paula Swearingen is here to fix that. Senator Swearingen is going to be here to fix that. She's going to push for Medicare for All. She's going to push for a new deal. And probably most importantly, she's for the jobs of the future. She wants everybody in West Virginia to have a good job. But she understands that the coal industry, it's like the horse and buggy industry. No matter what we do, it's on the way out. And
some people in West Virginia might be scared by that, understandably. But that's why we have leaders. That's why we have people like Paula Swearingen. Because she's going to take us into the future, you know, with green technology, renewable technology, wind, solar, you name it. All different industries that are going to blossom. And Paula Swearingen is going to be there to fight for the people of West Virginia, to fight for regular people and working people, to get you a good job. That's why she's for a new New Deal. So Medicare for all, a new New Deal, looking out for the people, infrastructure projects, renewable energy jobs, instead of jobs that make you sick and poison your water, as Joe Manchin sits on his rich fat ass and does the bidding of corporations. So people tell us, people love, no, you can't go after Manchin because it's guaranteed to lose if you go after Manchin. Hold on now. Bernie Sanders did a town hall in West Virginia, and a room full of Trump voters told Bernie Sanders, thank you. We love what you're doing, and isn't it ironic that you look out for us more than Mitch McConnell does when Mitch McConnell is a senator from coal country? A room full of Trump supporters cheered Bernie Sanders' agenda of Medicare for all and free college. He has a 61% approval rating, Bernie Sanders, most popular senator of the country. And you're here to tell me he's not popular enough. Candidates who are in his model, like Paula Swearingen, she's not going to win. She can't win. She's only following the mold of the most popular senator who gets standing ovations in deep red states. So there's no way she could win. Oh, she's going to win. So, but we need you. We need you. Our candidates, including Paula Swearingen, no corporate money, no PAC money. They don't take it because you can't be a Justice Democrat if you take corporate and PAC money, because that means you're going to represent the donors. The big donors, the corporations, the billionaires, the PACs. Our candidates don't represent them. We don't want them. We want you. We want to raise small amounts from a lot of regular people. That's what we want to do. And we have a goal in June, $500,000 by the end of June, Justice Democrats wants to raise, and we need you. We need you. If you believe in Paula Swearingen and you want her to defeat Joe Manchin, if you believe in Cori Bush and you want her to defeat corporate Democrat Lacey Clay, if you want to take down Joe Crowley and have Alex Ocasio-Cortez in there, who believes in Medicare for all and free college and fighting for a new New Deal and is against intervention, unlike Joe Crowley, against Wall Street deregulation, unlike Joe Crowley, you got to support us, man. Because the movement's right here, right now. Nobody's going to come save us. We have to save ourselves. So that means we all need to pitch in, donate time, money, effort to try to get real progressive populists elected. And what better time to do it when we learn Joe Manchin is against the Paris Climate Agreement, which is like the bare minimum we could do to fight back against climate change. So Joe Manchin just gave your grandkids and their grandkids the middle finger to represent his donors, which is why he needs to go. JusticeDemocrats.com/donate. Okay. Next. The state Senate in California just voted 23-14 on Thursday to pass SB 562, which is single-payer Medicare for all. So this is huge, and it's really exciting. National Nurses United worked very hard to get this accomplished. And by the way, I'd like to thank them because they worked with us, Justice Democrats, and Brand New Congress on our petition to get more Democratic congressmen on board with Medicare for All, and so far it's been an incredible success. We started with, the bill started with 72 co-sponsors. It's proposed by John Conyers, Medicare for All bill in the House of Representatives, and we got it all the way up to at least 111, I think it's more as of right now. And that's all because of the hard work you guys did. By the way, if you haven't signed that petition, I don't know what the fuck you're waiting for, because it works. This works. I'm just told you the results. 72 Congress people, all the way up to at least 111. So your pressure fucking works. They're moving because of you. So go to justicedemocrats.com/singlepayer. Sign that petition. And by the way, call your congressperson. If they are in favor of Medicare for All already, thank them. positive reinforcement is good. Hey, I want to thank you for being in favor of Medicare for All. That's one of the ones we view as a non-negotiable. And you're on board with it, so we got your back because you got our back. Or if they're not in favor of it, say, okay, we're just going to vote you out. Be polite about it, but just say, hey, look, I'm calling to let you know I'm going to vote you out. Myself, and I'm going to talk to everybody I know, we're going to go vote against you because you're a disgrace. You don't support Medicare for All. That's a no-brainer. What's wrong with you? Because of the pressure you put on, we've got way more Democratic Congress people to be in favor of Medicare for All. And National Nurses United and Brand New Congress worked along with us, Justice Democrats, to do that. But they've also been working very, very hard in California on this bill to get this passed, and they succeeded in getting it through the Senate. So it still has to be approved by the California State Assembly. So we're nowhere near done yet here. Still a lot of work to be done. And eventually, Governor Jerry Brown would have to sign it. And some of the finer points of the bill have yet to be negotiated. But still, this is a big step. And we're at the point now where New York and California are racing to be the first to set up a single-payer system. Here's my only concern, is that if it were to get through, I'm afraid the same thing will happen as happened in Vermont. Now, in Vermont, they already passed a single-payer bill. I think it was Vermont. I could be wrong, though. I know it was a northeastern state, smaller state. They passed a single-payer bill, but then when they tried to set it up, the health insurance companies, Big Pharma, all turned around and said, oh, well, we're just going to like price gouge you if you do that, and so you can't do it. And so they had to back out of it. There was pressure put on them behind the scenes to basically force them not to do it, even though it passed. So now the difference is New York and California, huge states, economic powerhouse states, and if they can get it done, New York and California have this way to fight back against big moneyed interests. A smaller state like Vermont doesn't as much. So if New York or California can pass it and then throw around their weight and get it successfully done, well, then we're talking domino effect. Just like how we saw with gay marriage. Okay, it passed in this state, passed in that state, passed in that state. You go through, and then eventually, whoop, look at that. Supreme Court at a national level said it's unconstitutional to not have gay marriage. You have equal protection under the law. They're supposed to have that. We could see a similar thing with single payer. It could go state by state by state, and then eventually somehow at the federal level, either by getting a wave of Justice Democrats elected or somehow goes to the Supreme Court, whatever, you could eventually see the same kind of thing unfold with single payer. But there's more money lined up against single payer than there ever was lined up against gay marriage. That's the other portion of this. You know, the anti-gay lobby is the Christian fundamentalists. They used to be a lot more powerful in the 70s and the 80s. They aren't as powerful now. And now there are some moneyed interests who are on the side of gay rights. So eventually, the ideology, the progressive ideology won out on that one, but also the money won out on that one. We need a really unified approach to stand up and fight back against big pharma and for-profit price-gouging health insurance companies in order to get this done. But New York and California are on the way, and that's very, very exciting. I can't wait to see where this goes from here. Okay. All right, let's squeeze in two more, and then we'll call it a day. Fundamentalists in North Carolina are in a little bit of trouble with the law. Look at this from Raw Story. North Carolina woman admits to leading 30 parishioners in beating of gay church member to expel his demons. Wow. So here's what they say. A North Carolina woman admitted in court in Friday that she led approximately 30 parishioners from her church to attack and beat a gay member of the church in an effort to expel his demons, Pink News reported. Sarah Anderson is one of five members of the Word of Faith Church in North Carolina who has been charged with assault on Matthew Fenner in 2013. Speaking in court, Anderson said she believed Fenner was unclean and sinful after the minister of the church, Brooke Covington, launched into a reported two-hour-long verbal assault on the man. The minister told Fenner that God said there is something wrong in your life in a testimony. Fenner said that Covington, who faces charges of kidnapping and assault, pointed out his sexual orientation during the attack, which was intended to expel his homosexual demons. Fenner states that the church members blocked him from leaving the church, instead holding him against his will as he was berated, slapped, and choked by fellow parishioners.
So isn't that crazy? They go, we're the good people, you're the bad person. We're good, wholesome Christians who are very moral, excuse me, and upstanding citizens. And so what we're going to do is we're going to beat you. We're going to kidnap you and beat your ass. So if, you know, your God you think is so moral and just and he is against gayness, is that God not against assault? So you expect everybody to worship your God, and your God is against gay people just being themselves, even though he created them that way, right? God created everything, so God created the gay people as gay. But your God is also pro-assault. That God is a pretty shitty God. That does not seem like an omnipotent God. That does not seem like a God who's really thought things through. And what's the dodge when you bring all this up? Lord works in mysterious ways. Okay, so what? God commits genocide in the Bible and stuff, and God has sex slavery and torture and all that. But, you know, he works in mysterious ways. So, yeah, sometimes God acts like Hitler, and it is what it is, and you're supposed to not be rational about that and judge it. I'll take a pass. Thank you very much. Look at how they act, man. They're that convinced they're right that they're willing to assault an innocent person. That's brainwashing. That's religious brainwashing 101, and this is a really sad case of it. And what's amazing is all this stuff is coming out in court. So it's like they're admitting it. They're like, yeah, no, that's what happened. I beat his ass because he's gay. So he has demons. They're acting like, it's cool, Judge, don't worry. Everything we did was on the up and up, totally moral. I mean, he's gay, so he had demons. So we had to fuck him up. Demons. What makes it so that otherwise rational adults just lose their fucking mind when it comes to religion, like fundamentalist religion? This is literalism. Demons. So that's what demons are focused on? If there were demons, is that what they would be focused on? Mwahaha, with their little horns. Mwahaha. Yes, we hate humanity. Mwahaha. And to show how much we hate humanity, I would make some of the men like other men. Like, ooh, you got them. Like, what the... I can't, man. It's just so stupid in so many ways. I can't even put it into words. All right, final story. This one's a little long, but I got to do it even though I'm out of time. Actually, I don't have fucking time. I can't do it. Shit. I got stuff I got to do after the show. All right, I guess we're saving it for tomorrow. But I love you, baby. I love all of you. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same place. And we'll do the Afghanistan story pretty early on in the show. All right, guys. Enjoy the rest of your day. Much love. Mwah. Peace.